This is Audible.
Podium Publishing presents The Battle Mage, Book 3 of The Age of Oracles, written by Ben Hale, performed by Kate Redding. Chapter 1. To War. Alidian stood on the prow of the ship, her eyes on the storm. Laden with survivors from the battle at Skykeep, the other ships were obscured by sheets of rain. Most were warships, but some were no more than fishing boats, and each wave threatened to capsize them into the sea. She'd requested the more fragile vessels be brought closer to her, and used her magic to still the waters. Her own ship rose and fell, dropping into a trough before bursting through a new wave. Sailors cried out as they sought to control the sails, and many cast looks at Alidian. She remained in place, the rain bending away from her to leave her untouched. Elenir appeared from below decks and fought the wind to reach her, sighing in relief when she passed through the limits of Alidian's shield. Wiping rain from her face, she gripped the rail and called out to Alidian.
"I keep trying to still the rain before I remember my magic is gone."
"Habits are hard to break," Alidian said.
"Are they ready?"
Elenir pointed to the captain's cabin.
"They have gathered, as you requested."
Alidian dipped into her farsight, the sea disappearing into purple clouds. Then a great forest appeared, each tree representing a single life, with its myriad of choices depicted in the canopy. Ever-changing, the woods lacked definition, the limbs obscured by indecision and confusion. Her own tree grew at the heart of the forest. Her future was littered with broken limbs and twisted branches, all depicting a ragged war with the Empire and a thousand choices that led to death. But much of the tree was not discernible, due to her indecision. Still, she managed to see that the storm would break within the hour, and their fleet would remain intact. She sighed and turned to her mother.
"I fear I am not ready to assume your mantle."
Elenir gestured to the tumultuous sea.
"You have kept us safe in the storm.
Being High Oracle is not so different. Yet instead of wind and rain, we face magic and the sword."
"I have faith in you," Elenir said, "as do the others."
Alidian nodded and stepped away from the rail. With her mother at her side, they worked their way to the door leading to the captain's cabin. A gust of wind ushered them inside, and rain passed around her shield to sprinkle the occupants. Alidian shut the door and turned to Toron, Raiden, and Devkin. Offering an encouraging smile, Elenir took the last empty chair. The captain's quarters were small, with a desk containing charts and maps, and two hammocks for Erod and his wife, Ronalia. A cabinet mounted to the wall contained more maps and a pair of spyglasses. The shattered windows rattled in the storm, causing the light orbs to tremble in their sockets.
"My friends," Alidian said, nodding to the quartet. "I'm sure you can imagine the difficult road ahead."
"You have returned to us," Raiden said, a smile on his face. "We will prevail."
There were murmurs of agreement, and Alidian inclined her head in gratitude. Tall and muscular, Raiden wore light armor that failed to hide his hardened physique. Prior to the Empire, Raiden had been known as the Soldier and hunted Verinai with his band of Defiant. Then he'd been a criminal. Now he was a hero. Raiden reached up and brushed his forefinger over his heart. The motion was slight, easily dismissed as scratching an itch, but it was a reminder of the love they shared. Alidian's heart warmed at the motion, and she smiled.
"Your confidence aside," Alidian said, "I was in Tariah's prison for a year, and much has changed in that time. The Mage Empire has fortified its borders, and the human and elven kingdoms remain in its grasp. Our army is small, and we cannot prevail alone."
"Release me, and I will crush them."
Alidian swallowed at the sinister whisper, the lingering echo of the magic of rage. It had been the instrument of her escape, but the cost had been great, and she'd nearly lost herself to an ocean of wrath. Only Devkin, her captain of the guard, had brought her back. She glanced at Devkin. A veteran swordsman, the grizzled human had held his own against the elite Verinai in the Rune Guard. He was her friend and protector, and he too had lost much. It had been a year since he'd lost his foot, but the absence had nearly broken him. Elenir had crafted a new limb from magic, a shimmering replacement to make him whole. Noticing her scrutiny, Devkin shook his head.
"Whatever happens, I stay at your side."
The third person in the room folded his arms.
"What would you have us do?" Toron asked. "Elsin Taraya and Maressa will not enjoy the sting of defeat. They will come after us."
A Verinai gifted with shadow and fire, Toron had departed the guild and become a forceful ally. Alidian had spent little time with him, but from her imprisonment, she'd watched his actions. He had his own agenda, but it was one she could trust. Toron's sister was another matter. As far as Alidian could tell, Marrow possessed as much magic as an oracle, without the control. Her mind was fractured, and she frequently argued with her second mind. Alidian had asked Raiden's lieutenants, Jester and Red, to keep an eye on Marrow below decks. The girl could shatter their ship on a whim, just because she wanted to see the splash. Sitting beside Toron, Elenir had been the High Oracle of the Eldris Council for centuries, and her power was legendary. Then Taraya had poisoned her, the curse leeching away her magic and her life. Instead, she'd used a horrending dagger, relinquishing her magic and the poison, in order to survive. Her magic gone, her remaining power was wisdom. Alidian looked about the room. Former Oracle, wanted bandit, exiled Verinai, and Rune Guard captain. They were her allies, friends, and family. But what she was about to ask would put them at risk.
"I would give anything for us to remain together," Alidian said. "But we must part ways."
Raiden blinked in surprise and leaned forward.
"Why? United as we are, we can finally stand against the Empire."
The ship dropped, causing them to catch the rods mounted around the room. Still on her feet, Alidian glanced to the window and saw a flash of lightning through the cracks. She cast a stilling charm on the sea, and the ship calmed. "We know nothing of the Empire's plans," Alidian continued, and spoke the first of three lies. "And my farsight is not enough to divine Taraya's plan." Since their departure from Skykeep, she'd sought every opportunity to use her farsight, but the effort to discover Taraya's plan had been maddening. Although she implied she knew nothing, Alidian had managed to catch snippets of titanic creatures and bloody battles.
"Where would you have us go?"
Toron asked. Alidian caught the calculating glint to the man's eyes. He'd once been married to Elsin, guildmaster of the Verinai. Then Elsin had turned their son into a guardian, and his love had turned to hatred. Toron wanted to kill her, and Alidian would provide the chance. "We do not face a single threat," Alidian said. "We face two. Taraya and Maressa lead the Empire and seek to bring the whole of Luminea under their rule. However, Guildmaster Elsin has her own plan for the Verinai, one we do not know."
"It involves my sister," Toron said. "That much is certain."
"Then you must discover it," Alidian said. Toron regarded her with a trace of suspicion. She was handing him the very thing he desired most, the chance to kill Elsin. Of those in the room, only Alidian and Elenir knew Toron's desire, and Alidian inclined her head, as if to say, "It's time." He frowned and looked away, obviously realizing that his secret was not his own. Before anyone noticed the interplay, Alidian said, Raiden, Jester, and Red must infiltrate the Empire. We must know their defenses, and you three are adept at evasion.
Can we not fight together? Raiden asked, eliciting knowing smiles from those in the room. She smiled as well.
Not yet, she said.
Worry flickered across his face, and he looked away. The last time they had separated, she'd disappeared for a year, and the ache of their parting had yet to heal.
Alidian sighed.
One more thing, she said. You must take Maro on your journey.
No, Toron said. My sister stays with me.
You cannot always protect her, Elenir said, drawing his gaze. She must learn to live without you.
She's dangerous, Toron said. To herself as much as to others.
She trusts Red, Raiden said.
You don't understand,
Toron said, jerking his hand in dismissal.
She could kill you and not even realize it. You cannot fathom everything she can do.
She's nearly killed me several times, Raiden said with a sour laugh.
I'll be careful.
Toron regarded him for several moments, his expression revealing his conflicted emotions. The man had risked everything to free his sister from Elsin, and now he was being asked to send her to scout her army.
Swear to me that you will keep her safe, Toron said.
I swear it, Raiden replied.
Toron regarded Raiden for a moment and then consented with a nod. Then he turned back to Elidian.
So I'm to go after Elsin alone?
Not alone, Elidian said. You will first seek another ally.
Who?
Toron asked.
Galathon? Elenia asked.
How did you know? Elidian asked, shocked that her mother had guessed her suggestion. Elenia smiled.
One does not always need farsight to see the future. Galathon is lethal and dangerous. More importantly, he hates Elsin.
Toron folded his arms.
You want me to work with an exiled rock troll king? He has a mind-reaver as a companion.
All the more reason to enlist his aid, Elidian said. The mind-reaver can track Elsin, and when you find her, you're going to need the reaver's might.
Do you know Elsin's intention? He asked.
No, Elidian spoke her second lie. We can be certain whatever it is, it does not bode well for us. Elidian had actually discovered pieces of Elsin's plan, but the more Elidian learned, the heavier her burden became. She'd shared her concerns with Elenir, and her mother had offered a sympathetic smile.
You now shoulder the mantle of High Oracle, Elenir had said, and deception will be your constant companion.
But why ask the troll for aid?
Raiden drew her attention back to the present.
Galathon is a brute without honor or allegiance, and it cost Elenir 500 gold for him to fight at Skykeep. How much will he require this time?
Elsin is the reason Galathon lost his throne, Elenir said. The prospect of revenge will be payment enough.
He's as likely to kill you as aid you, Raiden said,
his tone laced with disgust.
Perhaps, Toron mused. But I know Elsin. He'll need me as much as I need him.
Raiden released a breath and looked away, his expression doubtful. The ship abruptly heaved upward, jostling them and shifting chairs. When the ship stilled once more, Devkin turned to Elidian.
They have their quests, but what about us?
Devkin, Elenir, and I travel east, she replied, to Seascape. We can join forces with Princess Aura and her cousin, Duke Senin. He escaped the Empire with an army of 10,000. Once united, we will gather our allies once more and prepare for the Empire's advance.
Are you certain that is wise? Devkin asked. We were heavily outnumbered in Skykeep, and this time we won't have the fortress as an advantage.
We must act swiftly to capitalize on our victory at Skykeep, Alidian said. The people now know the Verenai can be defeated, and they will flock to our banner. By the time the Verenai army arrives, we will have the forces necessary to stand against them.
The people want their kingdom back, Devkin said with a nod.
Victory will hinge on the people, Alidian said. For if they rise to war, the Verenai will be swept aside, and even the oracles will not be able to stop them.
Can we win? Devkin asked.
Alidian forced a smile and spoke her third lie. We can. She then raised her hand to point south, to where Taria and Maressa stood on the bones of the fortress she'd destroyed. The first battle has been fought, but the war has just begun. Chapter 2 Parting. They discussed specifics for another hour before the sea began to calm, and sunlight appeared in the cracks between the window shutters. Then the door burst open, and Marrow bounded into the room. Slight of figure, the girl currently had bright red hair and a matching dress. Leaping to Toron, she dragged him onto the deck.
Come and see! The storm has ended!
Alidian frowned and stepped to the door.
Earlier than I expected.
Marrow giggled.
I got tired of the rain.
Toron sighed and allowed himself to be dragged onto the sodden deck. The others followed, but Alidian came to a stop in the doorway and leaned against the frame. She smiled as Marrow danced about and splashed in the puddles. Sunlight streamed through breaks in the clouds, reflecting off the drizzle in a dazzling display. Rainwater streamed off the deck, sluicing off the sleek vessel to fall into the sea. Waterlogged sailors paused in their work to smile at Marrow. Marrow giggled and spun, spreading her arms and sending a burst of water off the ship, cracking portions of the railing. Toron stepped to her and caught her arm, murmuring to her in urgent tones. She turned to Captain Erod at the helm.
Sorry for the railing, she said, clearly abashed. She didn't mean to break it.
Wood can be replaced, he said with a dismissive smile.
Marrow smiled at him and pointed to the railing, and the wood sprouted leaves like it still lived, the branches growing outward and bending, replacing the missing railing. Last to appear, a trio of flowers blossomed.
Much better, Ronelia said from the helm.
Pleased with the response, Marrow stepped to the rail and smelled her flowers. Then something caught her eye and she leapt over the railing. Her sudden disappearance elicited gasps from the sailors, but an instant later she appeared riding a wave, her cloak billowing behind her like a cape.
Blasted girl, Toron said,
and then noticed Alidian standing in the door to the captain's cabin. He stepped to join her.
Are you certain she will be safe with Raiden?
I cannot say anything for certain, she replied.
Toron blew out his breath and watched his sister. Alidian saw the inner turmoil on his features and realized he had more to say. Content to wait, Alidian watched Marrow's childlike joy.
How much do you know about me? He finally asked.
I know Guildmaster Elsin was once your wife.
Do you know we had a son? He shot back.
I do.
What she did to him?
She gave a tiny nod.
A guardian.
Can you heal him?
She raised an eyebrow, unprepared for the question. The guardian curse infused a living being with superheated magic, gradually replacing their flesh with pure power. Guardians were meant to be powerful soldiers, but the raw power ultimately led them to madness.
I don't know, Alidian said. But if we have the opportunity, I'll try.
Toron inclined his head in gratitude and then strode away. Raiden noticed her standing in the door alone and joined her. He smiled and leaned against the doorframe, allowing their arms to touch.
I hate your plan, he said.
Because you'll be with Marrow? She asked.
Because I won't be with you.
She met his gaze.
I truly wish we could fight together.
Why can't we? He asked.
Highly aware of the proximity, Alidian felt heat rising into her flesh. She reached out and brushed his arm with her fingers, a feathery touch that sent tingles up her arm and into her chest. Her breath caught, and she swallowed. You are the soldier, she said softly. I am the High Oracle. We each have our roles to play. Several emotions flitted across his face, and she read the conflicting desires. Raiden wanted to stay with her, to be with her, but he also had a duty to their cause. Last came resignation. He understood that his experience afforded the best chance at infiltrating the Empire, even if it was not what he wanted most. Alidian noticed Elenia watching them, a small smile on her features. While all eyes were on Marrow, Elenia smoothly stepped back and swung the door shut, all but pushing them into the captain's quarters, where they could be alone. Abruptly shy, Alidian raised her chin, and Raiden accepted the invitation. The kiss was brief and tender, but left her wanting. He grinned as he pulled away, his expression pleased as he slid his arm around her back. Then a delighted shout came from outside, followed by a wave striking their boat. Marrow? He asked. Marrow, she replied. He stepped to the window and swung it open, allowing a view of the sea ahead. Marrow briefly curved into view before banking away, the sea answering her will as a dog obeyed its master. Her unfettered laughter brought a smile to Alidian's lips. It's no wonder the oracles cannot foresee her, she said.
She is impossible to predict, he agreed. I wonder what she will do after the Mage War, he said. If she survives, she will no doubt remain a danger to all.
You think she might perish?
You would know better than I, Raiden said.
She sighed, the amusement fading from her voice. I fear my skill pales in comparison to my mother's.
Give it time, he said, his fingers intertwining with hers.
We don't have it, she said.
I wish we had more, he said, stepping closer to her.
She reached up and drew him into a second kiss. All the uncertainty and doubt were washed away in the heat of the contact. For an eternal moment she clung to the sense of security, the hope of a future together. When they parted, he grinned.
Why can I not kiss the one I love in public?
Oracles don't fall for bandits, she said with a laugh. Least of all one of your renown.
I'm not a bandit anymore, he said. Now the people call me their general.
And what will the dashing general do with his newfound freedom? She flashed a playful smile.
I think I'll scout the army that wants to kill me.
Her smile faded. Is it too late to rescind my plan?
I'm loath to admit it, but you're right. I have the best chance of scouting the Empire. But I admit I'm not pleased I'm taking Marrow. She nearly killed me at the Battle of Skykeep.
She listens to Red, Alidian said. You'll survive.
As long as I do not incite her anger, he said.
Alidian smiled and inclined her head in agreement. She'd seen Marrow's anger in her farsight, and it was enough to elicit fear in a dragon. Although she did not say it, she too feared Marrow's presence with Raiden. I cannot foresee your fate, she said, voicing the fear she'd kept guarded since her escape from the cell.
That's too bad, he said. Because I can see yours.
She raised an eyebrow. And what is that?
To be with me.
He pulled her into another kiss, more passionate than the last. She snaked her arms around him, pulling him tight against her body, yearning to remain in the moment. She sensed his desperation and knew it matched her own, but after they parted it changed into a warmth that sank into her belly, a confirmation that the one she loved, loved her. In turn. The memory of the moment lingered with Alidian as they sailed to Blue River, the western edge of the Mage Empire. Moments of privacy were fleeting, but Alidian saw Raiden's love in his eyes, in the way he smiled, the way he passed his forefinger over his heart. Each moment elicited a spark of joy. They paused between villages to allow Raiden, Jester, Red, and Marrow to disembark. Alidian embraced each of them, offering words of encouragement. She embraced Raiden last, clinging to him one final time. After a year in a cell, 2 weeks with Raiden felt like an instant, and she almost ordered him back. As the sun set, she stood on the railing where Marrow's flowers still grew and watched him disappear into the trees. He paused on the threshold and raised a hand in farewell, before scratching his heart with his forefinger. Then he smiled and slipped away. Alidian remained at the railing until they sailed downriver and the location passed from sight. Then she dipped into her farsight and watched him walking through the woods. The sun darkened the horizon before she returned to her quarters. "Come back to me," she murmured. Chapter 3 Laurendale. Raiden stayed in the shadows and watched the fleet sail by, his eyes on Alidian until a bend took her from view. Then he reluctantly turned away and entered Empire Lands, his thoughts turning to their assignment. Their task was simple, scout the Empire's forces, but the Empire was guided by Tariah and Maressa, both oracles that could foresee their path and set a trap. His greatest defense was indecision, and he used it liberally. The Empire had only existed a year, but what had once been a thriving monarchy had changed. Empire supporters were quick to report on signs of rebellion and were well paid for their traitorous actions. Suspicion and fear were rampant, and bandits had tripled. Avoiding the roads, they stuck to the woods for several days until they gave way to the plains that dominated the region. When he was certain they could not be traced back to the rebellion fleet, Raiden turned to a village where he hoped to glean information from the bartenders in the taverns. Throughout the journey, Red and Marrow laughed and talked, frequently lowering their voices as if they feared admonishment from Raiden or Jester. As they approached the village, Raiden motioned to the women.
"I think you should remain outside," he said. "Marrow's very memorable," Jester said, smiling as the girl leapt 20 feet to the top of a tree.
"Another mile," she called out gleefully. "Do you think we can have fried potatoes? I love fried potatoes. Especially with cheese."
"Can I have a look?" Red asked.
"Jump on up," Marrow called.
Red bent her knees and tried an experimental hop that carried her into the canopy. She managed to snag a branch and scale to Marrow's position. The tree was a giant, but stood alone, providing an excellent vantage point in the plains.
"I don't think we can stop her from entering the village," Jester said, his tone amused.
Marrow giggled at something Red said and jumped down, landing on the earth like a falling boulder, cracking the ground for several feet. Then she jumped to Raiden, her expression bright with excitement.
"Do you think they'll let me cook?"
Red carefully descended, laughing as she dropped the last few feet.
"If they're wise."
Raiden sighed in resignation.
"Marrow, keep in mind that the oracles may not see you, but the locals will remember you. Try to refrain from any strange magic."
"I'll do my best," Marrow said, offering a salute. "But she doesn't know what you mean by strange magic."
Abruptly, her shoes blossomed wings, and she lifted off the ground. She stifled a smile and shushed the shoes like she would an errant child.
"Oh," she said with a wink, "you mean strange magic."
Raiden rubbed the back of his neck and turned toward the village, wondering what he would tell Alidian if the girl ended up killing someone. But as he approached the village, he was forced to pay attention to the villagers. The settlement lay nestled in a stand of trees that bordered a small lake. A stream wound its way through the village on its way into the grasslands, providing water for the numerous farms that bordered the village. Built of thatch and wood,
The village of Laurendale was home to farmers and craftsmen, and was not a place frequented by mages. Still, after the Empire's takeover, Tyria had placed soldiers in every corner of the region, attempting to quell rebellion before it began. Raiden expected to find a score of soldiers supposedly keeping the peace, their real mission to identify and betray any villagers attempting insurrection. Donning their cloaks, Raiden's scouting party advanced into the settlement. The initial unrest by the Empire's takeover had died down, but the people's anger over losing their kingdom smoldered like embers in a hearth. Raiden walked down the main road, his eyes scanning the inns, taverns, and shops. The blacksmith paused in swinging his hammer, his eyes settling on them with a trace of suspicion. Next to his shop stood an inn, and a pair of older men sat in chairs on the porch, their eyes never leaving Jester.
"Where are the Empire's soldiers?" Jester murmured.
"Who cares?" Marrow said, eyeing the tavern. "I'm hungry."
"We care," Red said to her. "Do you think they wait in ambush?"
"They left 2 days past," Marrow said impatiently. "Can we please eat?"
Raiden and Jester exchanged a look.
"Why would they depart?"
the assassin asked.
"Let's find out," Raiden replied.
He turned toward the tavern, eliciting a cry of delight from Marrow, who bounded ahead and swung the door open. By the time Raiden reached the door, the girl was already at a table, calling for a meal of roasted potatoes. Long and rectangular, the tavern had been built of fine cedar, the grain of the wood visible in the walls and furniture. Much of the supports had been stripped of bark but left rough, giving the tavern a natural atmosphere. A stuffed boar's head hung on the wall above the hearth, while a bear trophy hung from the wall above the bar. The man behind the bar grunted in irritation and set down the glass he was wiping. Large, bald, and bearded, he looked like he'd owned the tavern for ages. He made his way to the table as Raiden and the others took a seat.
"What do you want?" "Roasted potatoes, venison, and ale," Jester said with a disarming smile. "For the table."
"And cheese on the potatoes?" Marrow asked. "Preferably of the dwarven fire variety?"
The man regarded her with irritation, and Raiden half expected him to deny her out of spite. Then he abruptly cracked a faint smile and inclined his head.
"For the lady," he said.
"Me as well?" Jester asked.
He turned away.
"No."
As the man entered the kitchens, Jester smiled at Marrow.
"I think he likes you."
"She says we remind Jeffers of his daughter," Marrow said absently. "But he doesn't like the rest of you. He thinks you stink."
"We do stink," Jester pointed out. "We've been on the road for days."
"Do you know what happened to the Empire soldiers?" Raiden asked.
An older woman exited the kitchens with four mugs and heard the end of the question. As she placed them on the table, she shrugged.
"They left 2 nights past. Cannot say why."
"They just walked away?" Raiden asked.
"We woke up and they were gone," she replied.
"Did anyone try to track them?"
"We've wanted them gone for a year," the woman said with a scowl, darkness tinging her eyes. "We counted our good fortunes and thanked Aero for their absence."
She turned and strode away to greet a large group just entering. They cast Raiden and his companions baleful glares before taking seats on the opposite end of the room. Jeffers's wife greeted the newcomers like they were old friends before bringing out several mugs.
"I don't like their look," Red said.
"That's the Teller clan," Marrow said absently. "They live on a farm outside of town."
"How do you know that?" Raiden asked.
"It's not my fault their thoughts are so loud," Marrow said, craning her head to sniff at the smells coming from the kitchens.
"Can you hear our thoughts?" Jester asked,
a sly smile on his face. Marrow swiveled to face him and giggled.
"Only right now," she said, and then turned to Raiden. "She wants to know why Jeffers and his wife are angry."
"Does it have anything to do with the soldiers' departure?" he asked.
"It has to do with their arrival," Marrow said, and then her features darkened. "I think their daughter fought."
"She fought the Empire?" Raiden asked. "Most of the youth did," Jeffers said, setting their plates down on the table. "I'm sorry," Raiden said. "We didn't mean..." "Rest easy, traveller," he said, offering a sad smile. "She gave her life for what she believed in. We could all hope for such a fate."
He turned and trudged away to serve the Teleclan, and for a moment the foursomes sat in silence. Raiden watched Jeffers go about his business, struck by the weight on the man's shoulders. The people had paid a heavy cost as the Empire sought to break their spirit. He turned back to his friends. "These people deserve the freedom that was taken from them."
As they dug into the first hot meal since before the battle at Skykeep, Raiden's mind shifted to the Empire's absence. Perhaps the Empire had decided to gather their forces to crush the rebellion before it could unite with Princess Aura. If that was true, a Lydian might face an army before she was ready.
"Where you be from, travellers?" one of the Teleclan called.
"Just passing through," Jester said with a smile.
"Where do you hail from?"
the man pressed, ignoring the older man at his side, who caught his arm in warning. Raiden noticed the strange glint to the man's eyes, and instinctively shifted his seat so he didn't have his back to the clan. Jester smiled, keeping the atmosphere light, as he claimed their origin as Terros. The man's family dragged him back to his seat, but he glared at Raiden's table, as did several of the other family members. The patriarch of the family scowled at his son and spoke in low tones, anger finally causing the man to sit.
"They're more suspicious than a rattlesnake," Red said, her smile gone.
Raiden took a bite of his meal and chewed slowly, casting surreptitious glances at the party. Of the nine, six had the same hard expression, their eyes fixed upon Raiden and his companions. The speaker was a giant of a man, a full head taller than even Jester.
"Let's go," Raiden said, catching snippets of the angry whispers passing between the brothers and their father. Even one of the wives glared at Raiden as if he was an enemy soldier.
"But I haven't finished my plate," Marrow protested. "And she's still hungry."
"So am I," Red said. "But is your meal worth blood being spilt?"
"It's delicious," she said, indignant.
"I'll make sure you can finish it later," Red said, rising to her feet.
"Is his food not good enough for you?"
another of the brothers demanded, a burly man with his head shorn to the scalp. Marrow leveled an accusing fork at the man.
"Don't question his cooking."
"I wasn't speaking to you, little girl,"
the giant man replied, back on his feet.
"Tak," the patriarch growled. "Sit down."
Tak ignored him while another brother rose to his feet.
"We all know who they are,"
he said, spitting onto the floor.
"They're with the rebellion."
He said the word like it was a curse, causing Raiden and Jester to exchange a surprised look. The Tellers were obviously generational farmers. The land probably worked by their forebears. Of anyone, Raiden would have expected them to support the rebellion, not be against it.
"We mean you no harm, friend," Jester said.
Tak's wife was on her feet, her scowl twisted with menace. "The Empire will want them."
"Tak?"
Jeffers asked, poking his head out of the kitchens.
"What's gotten into you?" "Stay out of this, old man," he snapped. "We all know you despise the Empire." "Of course I do," Jeffers said, exiting the kitchens with a chopping knife in his hand. You know what they did to my daughter.
Jeffers's wife exited the kitchen and caught his arm, attempting to restrain him from anything brash, but Jeffers brandished his knife like a sword. Tack dismissed him with a wave of the hand.
She was just like all the rebellion, Tack said with a sneer. They're all ungrateful trash.
In the shocked silence that followed, a chair clattered to the floor. Her eyes blazing with fury, Mara was on her feet, and even Red drifted away. Oblivious to the threat in the girl's eyes, Tack straightened.
Long live the Mage Empire!
Chapter 4 Discord. The shock of the statement reverberated in the tavern like a thunderclap. To hear it from the lips of a man without magic, who'd likely always despised those with it, was more shocking than the betrayal by the oracles. Tack's father stood and grabbed his arm, forcing him to look at him.
Boy, he snapped. What's the matter?
Tack backhanded his father, sending the gray-haired man to the floor. Another of his family stood and received the same fate, leaving most of the Teller clan to turn on Raiden and his companions. Their features filled with hatred, and they began to advance, shoving tables and chairs aside. Jeffers scurried to the door, calling for aid. His confusion matched by Jester and Red, Raiden retreated as Marrow passed him by. Raiden reached out and caught her shoulder, but she shrugged it off. She came to a halt just feet from the giant man.
She says you need to apologize to Jeffers.
The huge man scoffed and flexed his muscles.
Out of my way, little girl, before I snap your...
Marrow reared back and punched him in the gut, the blow knocking the air from his lungs and sending him flying across the room. His huge frame struck the wall and he slumped to the floor, clutching his stomach as he fought for breath. Instead of inspiring fear, Marrow's strike elicited triumph.
"She's a mage!" one brother cried.
"Then she's a traitor!"
a woman shrieked. They hurled themselves at Marrow. Raiden, Jester, and Red dived into the fray, but none drew their blades. Raiden ducked a blow and caught the outstretched arm, twisting and pulling to throw the man onto a table. The man crashed to the floor and bounced up, coming at Raiden with a furious glint in his eyes. Raiden ducked the blow and twisted to avoid another, before striking one assailant in the jaw. The youth was just out of boyhood, but he shrugged off the blow as easily as a veteran warrior and came at him again. As the soldier, Raiden had fought in countless battles, but few with his bare hands. Caught off guard by the sudden fight, he found himself trapped between two men and slammed into the wall. Another punched him in the face, filling his vision with stars. He rocked in their hands, and then caught the glint of a blade in his blurred vision. Twisting, he kicked off the wall and used the motion to pull one arm free. Then he dropped to the floor and put his foot on the second man's stomach, launching him over a table. He hurtled over a chair and crashed into another. Wood snapped, and the man cried out as he struck the floor at an odd angle, breaking his arm. Still he rose to his feet.
"They've gone mad!" Red exclaimed.
At the center of the melee, Marrow acquitted herself like a brawler, landing blows on any that stepped within her tiny reach. She could have killed them all, but Marrow's expression made it clear she wanted to hurt them. She ducked a swing from a woman and put her hand on her face, throwing her over the bar and into the shelves beyond. Bottles of ale shattered and rained down on her form.
"That was for Jeffers!" Marrow snarled.
Raiden surged into motion, recovering from his initial confusion to strike at a man attempting to flank Jester. Catching Raiden's arm, a shockingly strong woman twisted and launched him onto the table where they'd been eating, scattering food plates.
"My potatoes!"
Marrow screamed. She reached out, and a gust of wind lifted her plate and caught her food, bringing it to her hands. Fork in hand, she began to eat as she fought, using her feet to kick at the Teleclan that had desecrated her meal. The absurdity of the conflict had gotten to Jester, who was laughing as he battled two at once. Someone had struck his eye and it was cut, blood trickling down his jawline. He didn't seem to notice, and sent a man hurtling through a window into the street beyond. Red caught the remaining woman about the waist and launched her into the door. It snapped from its hinges, and she spilled into the street. Jeffers flinched to the side, narrowly avoiding the impact.
"Are they Empire soldiers?" Raiden called, struggling to fend off Tack, who'd risen and come for him.
Huddled behind the counter, Jeffers's wife answered in a shrill voice,
"Of course not! Ero knows why they would claim loyalty to the Empire!"
Raiden retreated from Tack, who towered over him. The man loomed over the rest of his family, but his gaze settled on Raiden like he was the devil himself. He reared back and lunged. Raiden ducked, and the fist plunged into the wall. Then he retreated up the stairs.
"You're just rebels," Tack snarled, following up the stairs as he flexed his enormous fists.
"I don't want to fight you," Raiden said.
"Doesn't matter,"
Tack said.
"You'll still die like a traitor."
He leveled another blow, this time at Raiden's chest. Raiden tried to avoid it, but the fist was too large and struck his ribs like a dwarven hammer. The blow knocked him through a door and into a hallway. Fighting for breath, Raiden spotted an open window in a room at his side and lunged for it. He darted into the room and leapt off the bed, passing through the window as a huge hand closed on his boot.
"You think to escape,"
he growled, dragging Raiden back inside.
"You're just a pig awaiting the slaughter."
Raiden rolled to the side and kicked with his free leg, connecting with the man's nose. The man snarled and released, allowing Raiden to leap through the window and drop onto the roof of the porch. People had converged on the street, the townsfolk forming a circle around the embattled tavern. Raiden dropped from the roof and darted inside, just as Red leveled a blow on the last one standing. At the bar, Marrow ate her potatoes, the only one unscathed from the brawl. A lone chair had survived, and Jester sank into it, a confused smile on his face.
"It's been a while since I've enjoyed a tavern brawl," he said. "I just wish I knew the cause."
Tack abruptly appeared on the stairs, his broken nose a mask of blood. Red and Raiden swiveled to face him as he scanned the room, anger tightening his large fists. Jester sighed and returned to his feet.
"Really? Do you want to be killed?"
Abruptly, a tiny woman burst through the remains of the front door. Her white hair and features marked her as the matriarch of the Teller family. She took the room in a glance, her eyes settling on her husband, still unconscious where Tack had struck him. Her eyes flashed dangerously and flicked to Tack, for the first time making him uncertain.
"Have you lost your wits, boy?"
"Stay out of this, mother,"
Tack said sullenly, and stabbed a meaty finger at Raiden.
"They are our enemy."
"They're just travelers,"
the woman snapped, picking her way through the broken tables and unconscious forms to stand before her son.
"You know nothing about them."
"They must be handed to the Empire,"
Tack said.
"They support the rebellion."
"We are the rebellion," she growled.
Tack's eyes flashed dangerously and he raised a hand as if to strike his mother. Before anyone could react, she reached up and slapped him. It did not harm, but the sting of the blow caused him to recoil.
"Don't you dare strike your mother!"
Tack slowly lowered his hand and blinked as if to clear his thoughts. He reached up and grasped his forehead, stumbling backward like he was ill. Then he grunted and shook his head, regaining his footing. When he looked to his mother again, his eyes were filled with confusion and sorrow.
"I'm sorry, mother," he said. "I don't understand what happened."
He shook his head again and suddenly became aware of what he'd done. Groaning with regret, he stepped to one of his brothers and helped him to his feet.
"I'm sorry," he said, casting a look at Raiden.
I should never have... You are... I don't... I'm sorry.
He scowled, but this time his anger was directed at himself. Then he reached his father and picked him up as he would a child, speaking to him in low tones, his voice filled with apology. Other brothers began to awaken, and they too displayed remorse.
"What just happened?" Jester murmured to Raiden. "You expect me to know?" Raiden asked, disconcerted by the sudden reversal in attitudes by the Teller clan.
Other villagers entered and offered aid, with Jeffers at their head. At first he was furious and indignant, but Tak choked an apology and promised to rebuild the tables and chairs with his own hands. His brothers were equally as apologetic and swore to repair the damage they'd caused. At the insistence of their mother, each begged forgiveness from Raiden and his companions.
"Are you really with the rebellion?" the youngest asked.
"We are," Raiden replied.
The boy, who couldn't have been more than 18, flashed a weak smile.
"Yesterday we were talking about how to join the resistance. Now I suppose we fight it."
"So you don't support the Empire?"
He shook his head.
"Not until we saw you. Then I just forgot about life before the Empire, and all the anger I'd ever felt poured into my heart." "Bylan," the father called. "Help clean up this mess."
The boy shrugged helplessly and departed, and the mother took his place.
"I'm truly sorry for my family. They were taught better."
"Anyone else act like this?" Jester asked.
It was said in humour, but the mother didn't smile.
"Never," she said. "I don't know what got into my boys."
Then she turned and helped pick up the kindling on the floor.
"Ugh!"
Marrow exclaimed. She stared at her empty plate, oblivious to the sudden attention she'd drawn. Then she picked it up and scanned the crowd until she spotted Jeffers standing over a pile of broken glass. He rubbed moisture from his eyes as he picked remains of the memory orb that had held his daughter's features.
"I have no more potatoes," Marrow said, her tone filled with regret.
"Blasted girl," Jeffers choked. "Can't you see I've lost everything?"
"If I clean up the mess, will you make me more?" Marrow asked.
"Of course," he growled sarcastically. "If you can fix a room my ancestors built with their bare hands, I'll cook you more potatoes."
"Done,"
the girl said delightedly. She tossed her plate into the air and swept her hands at the room, and wood began to move. Splinters and kindling clattered as they rolled across the floor, bumping across boots and shins before colliding. Then they began to knit. All gasped as the tables and chairs, paintings and glass impossibly fused into their original shape. Legs lifted seats, knitting to backs of chairs and righting themselves. Those holding broken tables found the pieces pulled from their hands, the broken tabletops folding back together, the knots sinking back into the grain. Glass tinkled as it melted together, reshaping bottles, and liquid coming off the floor to refill the reservoirs. Even the dishes became whole. Last to take shape, the memory orb on the wall reformed, and the image of the daughter appeared.
"Now can I have more potatoes?"
Marrow pleaded, as the crack in the bar filled.
"Girl," Jeffers said, his throat constricted. "You may have potatoes for the rest of your life."
The healing of the room and the gruff man's response filled the room with laughter and smiles. Tears in his eyes, Jeffers bustled off to the kitchens, and only Raiden was close enough to Marrow to hear her comment.
"She says to eat up,"
Marrow said to herself. Then she noticed Raiden and leaned close, her voice turning into a conspiratorial whisper.
"She says the plague has begun."
Chapter 5. The Exiled King. At Elidian's direction, Toron disembarked the day after Raiden and made his way southwest. Alone, he pushed through the trees until he reached the Great Western Road and followed it to Keith. The border city represented a sprawling settlement on the coast of the Southern Sea. Disorganized and known for corruption and piracy, Keith was a cesspool of villainy that not even the Empire had managed to cleanse. After the Oracles had created the Empire, guards had maintained a presence in every village, settlement, and city large enough to house a resistance. All except Keith. Instead, a company of soldiers had formed a permanent camp outside the city, a tacit admission that the Empire didn't want to deal with the occupants. Emboldened by the Empire's absence, the city had grown even more vile in the past year, with rampant tales of brutality, robbery, and murder. The wiser citizens recognized that time was against them and made preparations to flee the city should the Empire turn its attentions upon them. Toron gave the Empire camp a wide berth and approached the city from the north, entering through the broken gates. Wrinkling his nose at the reek, he strode down a street littered with unconscious forms. He'd chosen to enter in the dead of night to avoid recognition, but doing so had its dangers. Men and women who'd partaken too freely of hard ales were scattered on porch and dirt, snoring loudly. A pair of girls that couldn't have been more than 7 rifled through their pockets for loose coins. They looked up at Toron's appearance, but when he made no move toward them, they continued their thievery. Toron passed the Isle of Taverns and made his way to the waterfront. No less than 4 separate bandits sought to rob him, but all were left wanting. Nursing bruises and burns, they wandered off in search of easier prey. When he reached the waterfront, he worked his way to a tavern at the southern end. Raucous sailors filled the docks, and several brawled without interference. Smoke billowed upward from a burning inn, the flames licking through the wooden supports. Only the proprietor seemed concerned and raced about, calling for aid. Drunken sailors merely stumbled to another establishment, abandoning the inn to its ashen fate. Wary of a knife in the back, Toron picked his way through the crowd of pirates. More than once he heard footsteps stalking his wake, so he cast a panther of shadow at his side. The fires and lights from the city made it ethereal and blunted its claws, but the denizens of Keith were still led to fear. Toron reached his target and came to a halt, his eyes lifting to examine the troll's axe. Owned by Galathon, this tavern was the worst in the city. Frequented by killers too brutal for the Assassin's Guild, and thieves too violent for the Thieves' Guild, the tavern served as home to the exiled rock troll king and his companion, a savage mind reaver. Built of salvaged ships, the structure boasted masts as pillars and ropes lashing them into place. The roof was made from 2 hulls. Rumor had it, Galathon had killed the crews, dragged their ships onto the shore, and then flipped the ships to make his tavern.
"I hope you don't get me killed," Toron murmured to Alidian.
He remained in place, torn between departing and entering. Then he muttered a curse and advanced toward the giant door. Dismissing the cat as he entered, he swung the door open and entered the surprisingly clean tavern. More masts supported the inverted boats, the posts littered with blades, helms, and skulls of slain beasts, trophies from Galathon's conquests. The room was huge and vaulted, clearly built for a rock troll. Tables were massive, as were the chairs. The crowd in the bar came from every race, with even a pair of dark elves sitting in one corner. An enormous table of dragon bones dominated the rear of the room. Galathon sat where he could view the tavern, a mug in his hand. Tattoos spiked across his chest, arms, neck, and face. Each curve a kill, collectively forming the troll's sundering. A handful of his crew sat with him, including his first officer, a tiny gnome gifted in anti-magic. Others were human, dwarven, and orc, All were lethal, but it was Galathon's animal companion that Toron feared. The Mind Reaver was coiled by the roaring fire, its sheer bulk blocking the flames,